Chair of the California Boating and Waterways Commission, and I'm from Oxnard, California. Welcome to the Boating and Waterways Commission workshop. As a reminder, this is not a formal meeting nor a commission hearing. There's not a quorum and will be less informal and casual in style. We will not be making any decisions, but rather will be discussing and addressing questions and concerns regarding the Harbors and Watercraft Fund Condition Statement, as well as the division programs. This will be an open discussion, and we ask that you state your name before speaking. We look forward to a productive discussion and engagement on the Fund Condition Statement and an overview of all the division's programs. And now I call to order the February 9th, 2022 Commission Workshop. This meeting is being held virtually on Zoom. And as a reminder to everyone, this meeting is a live webcast and can be viewed at www.calspan.org. The archive video will also be available at the calspan.org website. So our next agenda item, we will have ad hoc committee reports from the various chairs, of the various chairs from the committees. I'll go ahead and start for the revenue generated subcommittee. So we had a meeting on December 17th, and we discussed the percentages of vessels registered versus expired registration throughout the state. We also discussed the possibility of creating new requirements or criteria for vessel registrations, as well as the possibility of requiring registration for kayaks and paddleboards, or the possibility of requiring some type of sticker as the quagga zebra of the invasive species stickers. And that's essentially the topics we've covered so far. Next, we'll have the Alternate Funding Source Subcommittee, chaired by Vice Chair Hawkins.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Chair Ehrman. Vice Chair Hawkins here, calling in from Truckee, California. And I am leading the subcommittee on the alternative funding sources. This meeting took place on December 16th, and I was joined by Boating and Waterways staffer, Edward Hard. And we were really just doing an intake and an audit of the subcommittee, gathering feedback. Again, I'm new to this subcommittee. So it was, again, getting to know the committee members and hearing some of their concerns. We have some feedback from that December 16th meeting, which we will be organizing a more agenda, having an agenda with to address some of these points that they were making. However, we're going to have that on February 17th. So the team and I are discussing next steps, but really it was just an introductory intake call. So I hope to be able to report more our next meeting. And that is my report at this time.
Thank you, Chair Hawkins. Program Development Subcommittee, chaired by Commissioner Peer.
Well, good morning, everyone. And once again, I have to apologize for coming on late. I somehow ended up in a different app or something. But regardless, we met the subcommittee on program development. We met don't recall the exact dates, but December and also mid-January. And I thought that it was... For me, it was very edifying, first of all, so I get educated on these issues. And as I told the attendees, I can't advocate unless I'm educated. So it was very helpful. And I have to give a real shout out to Karen Dill for being very responsive to the various requests or ideas that came out of those meetings, which primarily were trying to get a better understanding of why it is that beach erosion and so forth came to be part of Boating and Waterways Revolving Fund. And Karen was very good about laying down the history of that. And so then we asked her to come back with more information about, okay, well, how do we sort of partition this funding? In other words, the whole thing seems to have been lumped into Boating and Waterways, all beach erosion, with the exception of, obviously, you have, a lot of other people play into that, but trying just to get a better concept of how that all broke down. And I think we came to a very clear consensus that we need to somehow partition this, the funding for those programs in a way that is equitable among all of the, we'll just say, responsible parties. So in other words, I think there's a clear sense that boating and waterways bears responsibility for some of those programs, but there's an also a clear sense that there are other players who also bear responsibility for those funding, those measures or remediation measures. So I thought we had two very good sessions. We didn't really quite get to the invasive species things, although again, Karen Dill was also very helpful in providing information about sort of the history of that and how all of that got laid on to boating and waterways as well. We didn't really get to any point about new program development. There's also a sense that, you know, the abandoned vessels, that we should revisit that program and how that might be operated more effectively or cost efficiently. I'm rambling a little bit, but I think that for me, it was a very, very, very productive both sessions. And Ramona, you were on there too. So if I'm not leaving you out, I want to thank you for all your help as well. But such as it is, that is my report. I was speaking extemporaneously because I didn't know a report was necessary. I could have probably provided something more formal, Ken, had I known. But regardless, I'll stop talking now.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Peer. And I want to thank all the commissioners for their time and energy on these committees, as well as all the boating and waterway staff. We're looking forward to more engagement going forward on these subcommittees. So our next presentation discussion will be Lane Messi will present on the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund Condition Statement.
Lane, before you start your presentation, first, good morning, everyone. Ramona Fernandez, Boating Waterways. And also, I just wanted to, for the attendees, and for the panel as well. This session is we wanted to give the opportunity for the ad hoc committee leads, the chairs, to the commissioner chairs, for each of the ad hocs to kind of do an overall, this is kind of an overall review of what so far the ask has been within each of those ad hoc, within each of those committees. So I believe that there was a lot of material and documents that were provided to each of you in the various, through the various committees, and also as well with attendees as well as panelists. Those are also available on our website if there's someone from the public that is attending that hasn't been part of the committees, one of the committees. So I just wanted to kind of share with you, I've been in and out of each one of those committees, and I've noticed there's a similarity in discussions through them all. So I thought this would be kind of a good time to share to date all the data and documents that have been provided throughout each of the commission meetings. Obviously, you know, the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund in Lane's effort and work on providing an oversight or an overview of where we are at this moment. Obviously, we know that this document will be changing as we get actuals through our accounting department. So our bottom number will fluctuate throughout this, you know, throughout year-end time, and as the actuals get incorporated into this fund condition statement. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there before Lane starts this presentation. So, thanks, Lane.
Thanks, Ramona. Good morning, everyone. My name is Lane Massey. I'm one of the managers here at Division of Boating and Waterways. And I just wanted to take a few minutes and go over the fund condition statement for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. So let me share my screen here. Okay, can everybody see that?
Yes.
Okay, so this is the fund condition statement for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. This information was provided to us by the Parks Budget Office, and this is similar to what you'll see on the Department of Finance's website, the fund condition statement that they have posted there. This one's a little bit different. Is it? This one gives us a little bit more information for projections and estimate purposes. So looking here, 2018 and 2019, those are actual revenues and actual expenditures that have occurred. And fiscal year 2021 has not been reconciled or finalized yet. So 2021 through 25-26 are obviously all estimates or projections of expenditures and revenues. So the top half of the fund condition statement are all of the revenues, either transfers in or transfers out of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. The revenues are made up of registration fees, public and private loan repayments, and the gas tax transfer from the motor vehicle fuel account. Those are our main revenue sources for this fund. And you'll also see the transfers out, the $10 million to the Davis-Dahlwig account and $1.75 million to the SAVE program or the Abandoned Watercraft Abatement Fund. The bottom half of a fund condition statement are all of the expenditures that go out, not just for parks and DBW, but all of the other state agencies that have an appropriation to Harbors and Watercraft. This year, fiscal year 21-22, the division reduced its local assistance appropriation by approximately $12 million and our support appropriation by roughly $2 million. And that's just to match historical expenditure levels. And it's kind of the first step in righting the ship, so to speak. In this bottom section is where you'll find the $30 million general fund transfer into Harbors and Watercraft, which was approved by the governor. That $30 million is to offset the $10 million transfer to Davis-Dahlwig. It's to fund, $10.7 million of that is to fund our aquatic invasive species program, and another $9.3 million for missed revenues for the proposed vessel registration increase that was denied. And in fiscal year 23-24, that amount is reduced to $20.7 million from general fund, still to offset the cost of Davis-Dahlwig and the AIS program. Not shown on this document, but which is actually a really big deal, is there's also a $15.2 million transfer from general fund to the Public Beach Restoration Fund. And that's a big deal because historically, that transfer to the Public Beach Restoration Fund has come from Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. Additionally, the public and private loan program is currently still suspended. And let's see here. And just real quick on the revenues, I just want to point out a couple of things. You can see on the motor vehicle fuel account, these transfers here, obviously these are estimates and these numbers vary from year to year. In these three fiscal years, 18, 19, 19, 20, and 2021, there was some miscoding that occurred. So those fuel transfers are actually up here in miscellaneous revenues. I am told that the Parks Budget Office and Department of Finance are going to be getting together very soon to correct these numbers and make sure that they have matching documents that are posted on Department of Finance's website. So they're working very closely to correct these issues, but this is the most accurate information that we have. So I'll pause right there if anybody has any questions.
I got a question. Thank you for this presentation, Lane. That's super helpful. So this accounts for all the money that comes in from the voters' taxes. I guess my question is, we're talking about money that went into the revolving fund, but does this account for all the money that was raised through the voter fees and gas taxes, or is there external funds that were not got, that didn't go into the revolving fund and that are going to other projects? You understand my question?
I do. Yes. This should account for every dollar.
Thank you.
What, Lane, are, maybe this is a fundamental question. Is our fuel taxes, is that percentage based or is that a per unit based tax? In other words, gas now is $6 a gallon at the fuel dock, or is that just 22 cents a gallon no matter what? Because that's a lot of dough, right? You know.
Yeah, the gas tax is based on a percentage. So okay. there's a whole formula that's in place that's based on percentages.
Okay, so there's what you got a lot of, and I can't move this here, so I'm trying to get to where that gas tax thing is in there. So
yeah, there's the gas tax line there.
Okay, thank you. All right, and so that's flatlined across there, right? And I'm not seeing where the prior years.
So in the prior years, what I talked about, it was miscoded. So that's going to be shown here. So in 2021.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, 9.1 million. And then it jumps up to 14.1 as, you know, projected.
Okay. And why is that down from what it was? Well, you've got that other tab there from miscellaneous revenue. I mean, I can't move this thing, so I can't tell what year that is. The 23.
Yeah. So, yeah.
23,104 million, right?
Right, correct.
So what's that? Is that also fuel tax or? You see what I'm trying to drive at here is,
yeah.
Is, you know, that's a lot of dough, 14 million bucks, right? And is that number going to go up or, you know, that's. You see what I'm trying to get at? I understand that number moves, but I'm trying to get a better sense of how that number is going to move.
You know, being that these figures came from, you know, Department of Finance and the Parks Budget Office, I don't necessarily know exactly how they came up with that projection, but I will say that obviously, you know, 18, 19, and 19, 20, those are actual revenues that came in from the gas tax, right? So 2021, you know, I can't speak as to why that projection is lower than what actually came in. Yeah. But I can definitely have the conversation if I need to with those folks to figure out, you know, how they determine that number.
I don't think you need to dig deeper. I'm just, like I said, I'm just trying to educate myself so I understand what's going on. So that was my question. I actually, you went through it all very, frankly, very efficiently. But I'll just kind of leave it there. What was, does anyone know? I mean, I spoke with these folks down there the representative from, it's not Del Mar, but it's down. And I asked through what grace of God did we get $10 million out of the general fund for beach erosion? Because that's what these folks that I'm dealing with are very concerned about. And can anyone sort of speak? Is that going to be a sustainable model moving forward? Does anyone know?
Hi.
I'll let Karen take the reins on that.
Actually, Karen isn't here at the moment. Karen, we're tag teaming because there's obviously budget hearings are going on for that proposed. So that's in the proposed budget this current year. the general fund of the $15 million for those PBRF, the Public Beach Restoration Fund. And so it's still in the proposed phase. And so the division submitted those BCPs through this next proposal process. Your question on will it be ongoing to fund this project? I would say no at this point. There isn't any language in currently that identifies just for the general fund to support these funds or these projects. So, in our statute, it just says that we are to manage, it doesn't identify a fund source, but obviously Harbors and Watercraft has been funding these in the past. So at this point, we don't know whether there's not anything definite that it'll be an ongoing ongoing for the general fund to support these projects.
Okay.
Ramona? Then,
mm-hmm.
Just real quick, I'm sorry, Tom. So basically, it's possible that transfer was simply a one-time transfer because of the strength of the general fund last year?
Right.
Right. Yes.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. And so that, so anyways.
This is proposed. So they're, we're working on as it goes through this process, there could be changes. So there could be, once it does get final at the end, it goes through the Assembly and Senate and goes through hearings. But at this point, yes, it is just right now funding those to support those projects this next fiscal year.
Yeah, I don't know what I don't really know what our agenda here is today, but I think my understanding is one of the outcomes of these working sessions is that we make recommendations moving forward. And I think that there's a real sense from at least the people that I've been working with that this is like a major issue. And so I just kind of want to, dog ear that or footnote that for everyone's attention that, that's a pretty big piece of change. And however, we work through that, but I kind of want to put that on everyone's sort of, mental agenda that's, trying to get that money permanently out of the general fund would be, I think, very helpful for boating and waterways. That and Lane, also, there's this statute on that spreadsheet you had there. It's the Lane Davis or something.
The Davis Dahlwig?
Yeah. So can you just educate me on that so I understand what's going on?
Oh, sure. It's my understanding that the Davis Dahlwig account is what we do is we provide some funding for recreational opportunities on the State Water Project.
Okay. What is the State Water Project? I mean,
so
this
that's
is the Delta, like the peripheral canal and all that stuff.
Correct. So that, the State Water Project is, the DWR's project to ship water from Northern California to Southern California. And on that project, there are multiple reservoirs where there are or is recreational opportunities for boaters.
Got it. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's a transfer to the Department of Water Resources.
Okay, thank you very much.
The LAO did a piece on that. I can send it around and certainly send it to you, Ramona, to put on the website if people want to revisit it. And I had a question kind of about the back to the beach erosion fund. Beach erosion, I know I remember listening to Will talk about it at one of the budget hearings about, the history of marinas sometimes contributed to nearby beaches and their erosion. But the reality is beach erosion is also happening because of climate change. And I know in the budget, there's monies for climate change and sustainable technology and new developments. And I'm just wondering if that's not something that should be considered for beach erosion, because it isn't just one thing. And certainly beaches are eroding that have nothing to do with marinas. And I'd love to see some work on that. Public access to the beach, as we've seen in COVID, is so incredibly important. And this is something that I think the state itself should be embracing, not just boaters, you know, contributing to this, to funding this beach access. So I'll just put that out there as a general point.
Hey, Lane, if I could, the gas tax transfers, those percentages are set by legislation, correct?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
That's that was SB1, Ken.
Okay. That's what I thought. I wasn't. Okay.
Mr. Chair, we do have a participant raise their hand if you would like me to unmute them at this time.
Sure.
Okay. So, Jerry, you should be on the call.
Hello?
Yes. Hello.
Oh, thank you, Megan. Thank you, Ramona and commissioners. Just a couple of quick thoughts from RBOC, Corporation of Voters of California. Try to be succinct like everybody is being today. One, first off, we really, really appreciate the effort that is being made by State Parks, you know, Acting Deputy Director Ramona Fernandez, and you commissioners to look into the issues that you're looking into. We consider the exercise to be extremely positive and beneficial to, you know, the public and the decision makers. And we continue to be very encouraged by this process and committed to it. Secondly, we continue to believe that the letter that we submitted a few months ago remains pertinent and informative to the process. And it reaffirms some of the themes that individual commissioners and the subcommittees are mentioning today. Third would be, and I'm on a phone, so I'm not seeing Will's good work there on Excel too much, but I seem to recall that from information we've received earlier, the total fuel tax dollars attributable to boats set in the revenue and taxation code adds up to much more than the transfers that are discussed in the Excel spreadsheet. And I think we were informed before, I don't have the exact numbers, but that the total annual revenues exceed 100 million and somewhere near 7% actually finds its way into the HWRF. The other dollars, I seem to recall principally are sent over to state parks. Some at state parks is in its general fund. Some is in the SPRF, the State Park and Recreation Fund, that is derived from the SB1 increases that were accomplished. And there can be a difference of opinion on whether those funds are appropriately spent and, you know, in court, consistent with the statutory language for those monies to be sent there. In the old days, historically, I think the amount of HWR funds attributable, you know, the gas tax portion was way more than the 14 million a year. In fact, it was the primary source of funding. Other sources of funding, you know, included, you know, the repayment on the loans, a very small portion of registration fees, and very appreciative of the general fund transfers. And then I'll conclude with just a couple of thoughts for you, all of us. One is, I think it's going to be on the commission's formal agenda at its formal meeting, is the governor's proposed budget and for the fiscal year that begins July 1. And it might be worth looking at how that impacts this project, because I, you know, as Commissioner Pettibone mentioned, there's a $13 million general fund, you know, for beach erosion control there, you know, in the current program out of the general fund. There's no funding for the private made loan program. And to see whether in the governor's budget is proposed and be considered, is there a thought that this process will continue for a while longer, or is this going to wrap up in May? I think our perspective on it would be picking up upon our, how wonderful it is that you're all looking into these issues the way you are. This process needs more work. Like Commissioner Peer mentioned, the whole focus has been on the beach erosion control program, which is, in our view, not boating related and the climate change related. And we haven't looked at the Marina Lobe, the loan program, the grant program, the education program, the PR program, the abandoned watercraft program, or any new programs to meet the future for boating. Those are critical, we think. I think you all are the right people to think about it and discuss it and prepare recommendations. So we think the process should continue with all of your involvement and the resources being dedicated by the DBW folks, but that there's a lot more work to do. But we think the process ought to last past May, maybe into the next fiscal year. Our commitment is to give it the kind of input that we are now continually, because we were very appreciative. So, thanks for the opportunity just to say a few words here.
Thank you, Mr. Desmond. I appreciate your comments.
Chair, can I just have a follow-up question actually with Lane? So Lane, on that point regarding the gas tax, so the document that we saw, that doesn't account for all the money coming from the boating public. And SB1 does direct it to SPRF and to other places. So does this chart account for that going to parks and those different funds or not?
The number that's captured here on this gas tax transfer is only the portion that goes to harbors and watercraft. So it's only the boaters portion.
Okay. Well, it's the portion going to the harbors and watercraft fund, not the portion from the boaters going to SPRF and the state parks.
Correct.
So it doesn't capture everything. So the answer to my previous question would really be that it doesn't capture everything. It's just capturing what's going into the harbors and watercraft fund.
Correct. That the number that's reflected there is the it's the dollar amount as it relates to the percentage that's laid out for all of those gas taxes.
Right. Which, the SB1 didn't account for all the money coming from boaters. It only accounts, it takes that money and diverts it into different buckets. So the harbors and watercraft only gets a certain piece of that coming from boaters.
Correct.
Are there other funds that are coming from the boating public before it's going into harbors and watercraft fund, other than the gas tax? Do we know?
Well, registration fees.
Those all go into the harbors and watercraft fund?
Correct.
There's no diversion to DMV or any other agency?
No, because DMV, they deposit the full amount that they collect because DMV has an appropriation to spend against harbors and watercraft.
Okay, got it. And then what about fish and game food, or the Department of Ag? Do they do any diversions before it goes into the harbors and watercraft fund?
Not that I'm aware of, because again, they all have a direct appropriation to the fund.
Okay.
Do we have any more questions or any more information, Lane? Are you?
I have nothing more.
Okay, Megan. Did we have anybody else that wanted to ask a question from the attendees?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing any hands raised.
Okay, so we have additional staff that are going to make presentations on division programs.
Mr. Chair. Could I make a comment just to Jerry Desmond's comment on the timeline here? So this process isn't going to, so the expectation isn't that we have something, a proposal in place for, a May or moving. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. And so it'll go through the following fiscal year. So we're looking at, as you noticed on the sheet, and I think what Lane, his fund condition statement on is, what is it, Lane? Under here, 23-24 fiscal year is I think when we need to have something in place for that fiscal year is a proposal move forward with through the budget process. When we get into 24, according to the data that we have now, and again, these are all estimates, as I mentioned, 24-25 is when we become, this fund goes in the red. So 23-24 is when, and again, this document, as I mentioned, is, you know, as those actuals occur, that bottom number could fluctuate depending on, you know, what we spend, actual spend expenditures and revenue. So we don't have just this year. We do have an additional year or so, that a year and a half, I think, that we'll still be working on proposals. As Jerry mentioned, yes, we do have, there's, you know, quite a bit of issues that we need to look into. I think some proposals may be able to get fluctuated out sooner than later. For example, you know, the funding was mentioned on the public restoration. I think if it goes through that these projects are funded through general fund, and I think the document that Karen shared, and hopefully all of you will get a chance to kind of go over a lot of that work on those committees, to view a lot of that information, because it was really helpful historical data that, you know, the beach restoration was actually funded in the general fund in the past, and then came to Harbors and Watercraft. And so I think, you know, that program and perhaps others, the aquatic invasive treatment program, and those that we can kind of flesh out and determine that, yes, there is possibly a percentage, you know, that would benefit voters, but there also are many others that benefit. So perhaps, you know, these should be funded through an a different source. And then again, you know, the revenue, and then, you know, diving into possibly the transfers out of this fund, and then looking at, you know, where we can potentially have additional resources to come into the fund or revenue. So again, I know that, you know, that the talk was on one of the committees, might've been the RevGen or alternative, was, you know, how to engage with the non-motorized, and that's a whole other issue. So, so anyways, I just wanted to let you know that you are, you know, that this doesn't end May, that we do have some time to come up with some decent proposals that will help us, the state, the division, move forward with a BCP, a budget change proposal. And then Commissioner Chair Ehrman, as far as other program, division programs, I think we really just wanted to kind of dive into the Harbors and Watercraft Evolving Fund and give an overview for all of you, as well as you know, anyone from the public, but for you to understand this document. You'll be seeing a lot of it over these next several years. But also with the information that was shared with all of you on programs, I guess I wanted to kind of open it up to ask if any of you had questions on the information that what was provided to you. We had a chance to read it. We have some experts here on the line joining us with, you know, Eddie's program on a quick overview. If the commission would like, we have Casey Caldwell, who's our expert in the public beach restoration, to kind of do an overview. So I just kind of wanted to throw it out to the commissioner, commission, to ask if you wanted any additional information on those programs, or to kind of go over any of the information that was provided to you.
I do not. Do any of the other commissioners have additional questions?
Not at this time.
Mm-hmm. Well, since this is a, you know, kind of an open forum, so in my subcommittee, we've dug really deep onto the whole beach restoration thing. And we haven't really, I don't know if there's anyone on this call or on this meeting who, moving on to the whole invasive species subject matter, right? And I think we all have a real clear understanding that lakes, that's recreational boating, and that boating on waterways should have to kind of do the heavy lifting there for zebra mussels and all that stuff. What I'm still not getting is why the invasive species in the Delta, which is, you know, these plant species that apparently ended up there from people draining their aquariums. So however it ended up there, but why that's on our dime. I mean, I don't get that. So I don't know, do we have any one on this call that can kind of speak to that?
We do. We have Mr. Hart here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, and public guests and other staff members of boating. I'm Eddie Hard, the manager of the Aquatic Invasive Species Branch, and oversee the quagga and zebra mussel program, which is a statewide program for the Division of Boating and Waterways, and also the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control program, which is specifically in the Legal Delta and its tributaries in the Sassoon Marsh. So I can share my screen briefly. I will direct you to what was sent out to, I believe, all the commissioners and perhaps public members. I'm not clear on that. But there were some questions that were asked, I believe, in the Program Development Committee. And I believe this was shared with that committee. There was a question about, you know, where did the species come from? But I think, Commissioner Peer, the question that you're asking is, why did the division become responsible for administering? The answer that we provided was the pursuant to legislation that came forth in 1983 through a Senate Bill 1344. That was directed towards boating. And the answer here, as we have provided, the only additional insight I can provide is that this issue relative to aquatic invasive plants in the Delta is very unique. Yes, there are invasive species all over the state. However, this particular issue has generated a repository of expertise within this division, and solely within this division, within the entire state of California, for aquatic invasive plants. And so expertise really rests with the division. That I think was a driving force with the legislation that began that process. So I think that in part is an answer. I may have more to answer if you give more specific questions. I'd be more than happy to, but I do want to, kind of highlight the separate nature of the aquatic invasive plants is not a line item in the budget. It's more of a discretionary, Ramona, appropriation within the Harbors and Watercraft. And that is distinguished from the other part of the program I oversee, which is the quagga, which has its own funding source, which is through the QZ quagga and zebra mussel sticker, which is a separate funding source. Even though the money that's collected through that sticker goes to the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, that program essentially pays for itself through that sticker program. Whereas the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program solely in the Delta as opposed to being a statewide program, does not pay for itself, such as the Quagga does with the sticker. Does that help, Commissioner?
No, I mean I get that. I think the concern, and I think you've bifurcated the issue very well, and I understand the whole muscles, and that's why I tried to articulate that earlier, that there's, I think there's a real responsibility among voters to sort of self-fund that whole program with muscles and others, you know, these, we'll call them invertebrates, right? Distinct from a plant invasive species. But I think my question, what I'm trying to drive at, is that you have these plant invasive species in the Delta, right? And you have a lot of, you know, what Mark, I won't get into the Mark Twain quote about water and whiskey and which we fight over, but
we're the familiar point is,
So I guess the point is there's a lot of other, I'll use the word stakeholders, right, who benefit from having clean waterways in the Delta. So some of those are agricultural interests, there's shipping interests, there's Southern California. We sort of got into that a little bit earlier about shipping all this water down to the folks in Los Angeles. So there's a lot of stakeholders in that, in keeping those waterways clear of these plant invasive species. And this sort of gets into the alternative revenue sources, which is not what my, you know, my subcommittee is all about, but that's what I'm trying to understand. And I did, obviously, I read what you produced to me. So it sort of seems like what happened is historically voting the waterways took this on, and we've just kind of, in some sense, left holding the bag, right? I mean, I don't know if that's a fair...
We can shed some more light on that, and Ramona will keep me in the guardrails. But I think the department leadership, which includes Ramona and then down through me, has been aware of the question that you're posing, and we are working very hard to address that, because I think someone earlier mentioned things needing to be equitable and responsible parties. So we have listened, and I think a really good example that the division leadership provided to the commission a few years back was demonstrating through a Delta tour that even though the legislation and Harbors Navigation Code section 64 and 64.5 lay out that the division through now state parks is the lead state agency to identify, detect, control, administer, and manage invasive aquatic plants pursuant to the legislation, it does not necessarily mean that we have to solely fund it. And so what we have leaned into, and this, I think, has been demonstrated to the commission in past presentations, is that we are leveraging the partnerships with the other responsible entities, or what I'd call sister agencies. So that I think we're recognizing in this program, it is a shared responsibility to not only provide and defend for marinas and ski facilities, but also, say, ag intakes and water conveyance facilities. So the Department of Water Resources, through actually the state water contractors, have provided through a five-year agreement to the Division of Boating and Waterways $32.5 million to support this endeavor. So $6.5 million a year can be reimbursed. So if we have the authorization of spending authority within the division for this program, up to $6.5 million can be reimbursed back to the Harbors and Watercraft Fund from the efforts that the other entity, responsible party, would like us to work on, meaning within the legal delta, the other responsible party, in this case, the Department of Water Resources, has certain areas that they would like the division to treat outside of marinas and ski facilities. So they say, oh, well, we would like you to do this because we recognize that since 1982 or 83, this division is the state expert on aquatic invasive plant control. Please come and do this, and we will pay you to do this work. So that's what we've been doing for the last 3.5, almost 4 years now. And so that is a step in the direction that we believe that the division, through the division leadership and the department leadership, is one avenue to travel here, to spread the responsibility, because the other partners recognize that they have a role to play as well, and they've leaned forward and worked collaboratively with us in a cooperative manner to create these interagency agreements whereby these monies can be shared. So the burden solely is not on the Harbors and Watercraft Fund. That's a good example of what we're doing, and we're working harder in 2022 to expand that model, if you will, to other departments within the state envelope, and perhaps even federal or local agencies. Does that help?
Oh, it's very helpful. I mean, that's
excellent.
That's what I want to know, and I hope I didn't come across as being accusatorial.
No, not at all.
Just trying to understand, right? You know, this is a session
to share information, and I think that this is highlighting what we've been doing.
Yeah, very helpful. Thank you.
Sure. I had a question, Eddie. I know we've done the workshop where this came up before. What is the out of the Harbors and Watercraft Fund the budget for the invasive species control? What portion of the budget does it take up?
So currently, it's $10.3 million. And that's historically down from 12.595 million. Most of those increases have been through budget change proposals that I believe, Ramona, correct me, I could be mistaken. Part of this current allocation of $10.3 million is a $2.8 million allocation that it's from drought funding, which is not the Harbors and Watercraft. But the other portion of that 10.3 is from Harbors and Watercraft.
Certainly the drought, as you've been very educational over the years, it really impacts this. And it's a big problem. So I can see that the drought funding would be very helpful for this. So with the State Water Board, $6 million, that would leave us at $3 million. Is that, am I right? Like going forward for costs?
For clarification, it's the California Department of Water Resources.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yeah.
Sure. We're working on an angle with the State Water Board as well. But Lane may be able to explain this better, but we have authority through our budget office and through the Budget Control Act, if I'm not mistaken, through the annual budget, that says, well, how much authority would the division through the various programs need to spend? And so like reimbursement authority. And so we have authority up to 6.5 just for this program, the aquatic invasive plant control. And our goal is every year to seek that amount to get reimbursed for. So we actually have to spend it in order to get reimbursed for it. It is not a direct appropriation from the State Water Recreation Resource Fund, which is where the money is coming from the California Department of Water Resources. Lane, can you clarify that?
No audio. We can't hear you.
Kind of a follow-up, Mr. Hard, is there any agencies or entities that you've identified that should be participating in this that aren't? Are there any groups that should be assisting with these programs that haven't entered into agreement with you guys?
It's a delicate question to answer. And you got me there. Nice to pin me here. But so how I'll answer this is that I don't want to get into ongoing budget issues as we're working through a budget process, right, as you might appreciate. But I think if you look at the question that was made earlier, the point about responsible parties, there are entities within the ag sector. They may not be directly agriculture, but they could be water conveyance authorities that provide that water to the agricultural communities that have approached us. Secondly, there are other state initiatives within the Delta that have an indirect or direct benefit in the wildlife community that need our assistance. So those are some angles that have been approached. Have we been approached by those various entities? And so that's a possibility.
Thank you.
Sure.
Edward, just completely maybe off the wall. There's no cure to this problem, right? This is just an ongoing problem. It's an endemic problem, right? There's no like, oh, eventually we're going to come up with some other. I mean, am I understanding that correctly? This is a science question, but I'm more curious than anything else.
So in general, the question about is the issue of invasive species a battle we're going to continue to fight? Is that the question?
That's the question.
So, right. And the California Invasive Species Council, which is overseen by the Natural Resources Agency and the California Department of Food and Agriculture, there's a variety of natural resource agencies that are part of that council, as well as the California Department of Food and Ag, reclamation districts, and so on. Species invasions impact all parts of each sector of every part of our economy. And so this particular one, considering it's in a hub of California's water conveyance system, is a flashpoint. So a lot of the energy has been invested there because of a variety of things. And that also happens to be a hub for marine recreation, recreational boating, and so on and so forth. So it happens to also be at the lowest point within the hydrologic areas of the state, minus the bays, if you will, the ocean front. And so our jurisdiction is in this kind of bathtub, if you will, but yet everything above the bathtub that's coming in is sourcing all of these invasive plants. And there is no control actor above, quote unquote, boating and waterways. So we are basically fighting to stay behind in a sense, because the efforts that we invest in these sectors, whether it's the marinas, the ski facilities, there's still loading coming in outside of our jurisdiction that we are challenged with trying to address. And we don't have any control over that. But there are other entities that are working to try to slow the progress of, number one, the introduction of a variety of different plant species, but two, figure out, through, for example, the California Department of Food and Ag has existing authority statewide to create what they call weed management areas. And these weed management areas can be both terrestrial and aquatic to address these locations outside of the Delta, and perhaps they could even create one in the Delta to augment what we're doing. But more to your point, outside of the Delta, these entities could be creating pathways to slow these invasives down. So it is a constant threat to the economy. I mean, the work we did with the quagga program in the Tahoe Basin, there's billions of dollars potential impact if QZ mussels, for example, would ever get into that watershed and just cause havoc. We've seen it down in the southern parts of the state where they get into the aperturient works of the water conveyance facilities, whether the state or local entities, and cause clogging of pipes and so on. So it needs to be all hands on deck sort of approach. I think that was an opinion that you didn't ask for, but I apologize.
No, that's what I wanted to know. I mean, I never thought about sourcing, right? I always said, okay, well, it's just there in the Delta, but you articulated that point really well. And so it's not going away anytime soon is the short answer, right?
I
mean, it's a constant battle. And there's going to be more sourcing issues, and there's no magic cure I appreciate it. Really, that was a great answer, and that's what I wanted to know.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, we do have a participant raising their hand. If you'd like me to go ahead and unmute them.
Yes, please.
Jonathan Clay, you should be on the call.
Great. Can you hear me? I'm using my computer, so this not sure if it works or not.
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Jonathan Clay. I represent the city of Encinitas on Beach Sand and also represent Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. So this recent topic of Delta weeds has been a big interest. I just wanted to kind of chime in, kind of big picture for both those programs. These are, you know, programs that are drawing from that Harbors and Watercraft Fund that we need to kind of figure out a more sustainable sort of revenue source going forward. But I think with both of them, whether it's beach sand or the Delta aquatic weeds, we really appreciate and understand the expertise that are at Department of Building and Waterways and want to try and make sure those programs stay there. Because I think that's where the expertise is for both those areas, the understanding and trying to figure out how we can bring additional revenues to support those programs there, but being able to house them. So, and, you know, on the aquatic weeds, something that I don't think Ed directly addressed, but one thing that also should be considered, there's major restoration, Delta restoration projects going on that provide environmental benefits. And those projects are jeopardized as well by these aquatic weeds. And so that's, there's, you know, a lot of different things that I think can be brought to the table as it relates to that. And from Met's perspective, we're just looking for continuing the program. It gets more expensive as we start moving forward. I think Ed can talk about this because I think when you get into greater treatments, what those costs are. But anyways, I have to jump and go to a budget hearing where beach sand will be possibly discussed. And I just wanted to kind of throw out there the kind of a marker that we really want to see these programs continue at Department of Building and Waterways, but stand ready to kind of figure out how we bring some additional revenues to make that long-term and sustainable.
Thank you for that.
We have a another hand raised as well. If you'd like me to continue with that, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
Okay. Bo Biller. Bo, you should be on the call.
And unmute. Okay. Hi, Mr. Chair and commissioners. First thing, I wanted to start off by saying, I know we're in a workshop, so kind of speak freely, I guess. On behalf of MRA, the yacht brokers, and the harbor masters are my clients, which were co-signatures to the letter with the RBOC and the other boating organizations going back, I guess that's a little over a year ago. I don't want to say what a long, strange trip it's been, but the beginning of the subcommittee process, I want to say was a little lumpy. But I want to really appreciate and thank Ramona and staff and the commissioners that have stepped up to participate and run those meetings. I think the information has been extremely valuable. The questions raised sometimes without answers, but I feel like this whole process is getting us to a place where, in my opinion, and I don't have authorization to speak specifically for my clients on this one, but it seems to me that we're getting a great understanding of the expertise within the division and the uses of the fund, which may have been, let's say, over enjoyed over time. And I feel like we're getting to a place where we're kind of understanding the nexus and the positions of our clients and how we fit into the role and the overall budget for the division. And I guess ultimately, going back a ways, you know, one of the reasons we've headed down this path is to understand the fund and its continued or future insolvency, and how do we wrestle with these various things. One, what I think my clients would look at is maybe a spending on things that aren't their responsibility, but also how do we pull in the funds which are available to us, make the fund whole, and seek its ultimate objective. So I guess mostly a thanks for getting to where we've gotten so far. And I think we look forward to continuing this dialogue down the road. It seems to me, I hate to use the term fascinating, but I'm learning a ton on this and I appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you for that. Do you have any more, Megan?
At this time, no.
Do we have any other
questions? I had a question. We talk about where these plants came from, Eddie, and it's like, I think about, the 10 cents or the extra amount we pay for, buying bottles or cans. And I kind of can't help but wonder if folks who are, in the aquarium business shouldn't be having a little, charge. We have the sticker for the boats, for the mussels, and they are paying for the project to clean up the invasion of the mussels, zebra mussels. So, why aren't the folks who are dumping their plants, causing this problem, paying a fee and some sort of sticker? And that's, I'm sure that we just, are going to have now the aquarium business go up in arms, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, this is a point that was addressed during a 2-day discussion at the state capitol we had about 3 years ago for invasives statewide. And this reminds me, early on in my days, this will be the 8th year here working alongside Ramona and the rest of the division, we submitted through the division and up the chain, and I believe it was looked at that we need to work more closely if we want to address these types of things with a variety of partners through, say, California State Association of Cities and Counties, because these types of issues you bring up about plants, you can go to a nursery and acquire these plants. You can go to perhaps farmers markets and acquire these. That is not our jurisdiction. That's the jurisdiction of California Agricultural Commissioners and Sealers, which would need to work with local jurisdictions to enforce those actions. And they're clearly enforceable actions. It's just that they have to have a process for it. And some of these plants, several of which Odin is now authorized to take control over within the Delta, are listed as, there's a certain pest rating by the California Department of Food and Agriculture that can take enforcement action through ag commissioners, agricultural commission offices, A-rated pests and such. And, when they're found, they can take action. So there is that mechanism that's already in place. But right now I could go, while we're having this conversation, on any online platform and acquire these plans and have them delivered to our offices downtown within probably 48 hours. So I wouldn't do that, but the process affords me that ability. So, whether it's the aquarium trade or other, I don't know.
So follow Mr. Herr, again, theoretically, you're ordering these plants. How many of those plants would be ordered? They would actually come from out of state.
Well, as many as I can get.
Yeah, so I think that would be one of the issues as well.
Interstate Commerce Clause issues with that, but I think right now it's just a certain tax so that the state can get sales tax through other vendors. I won't go and name the vendor.
Amazon.
So it's no different than me being able to order herbicide that this program utilizes, and I can order that online as well, as long as it's not a restricted use herbicide. So there's a variety of other issues that, on the back end. And one point I wanted to make, and Mr. Clay brought it up, with Metropolitan Water District, they were essential in working with the Department of Water Resources to facilitate ultimately getting this contractual interagency agreement we have now with the Department of Water Resources. And that actually is for restoration activities that are tied, interestingly enough, to initiatives by the California Natural Resources Agency. So the $6.5 million that's being reimbursed for by the division goes towards actions that the Department of Water Resources is on hold for, pursuant to, say, federal biological opinions, that they have to do restoration in the Delta. because of water diversions. And so those initiatives at agency are to restore habitat for specific species such as the Delta smelt. It was a very complicated process in the Delta. I'm more than happy to discuss it, but I don't want to bore and take away from this conversation.
Do you have any other questions or comments from participants, Megan?
At this time, I'm not seeing any. I should have mentioned that if you are a participant listening in by phone, it is star. Sorry, one second.
Here. It's star 9 to raise your hand.
Yes, thank you. Star 9 and star 6 to unmute. But at this time, I am seeing no other hands raised.
And anything else from commissioners?
Well, I don't want to open a whole can of worms here, but because we've been going for almost an hour and a half. I'm really unclear, and maybe I'm so happy that I have all these experts here. Maybe this is a question for Ramona. I'm unclear on what's going on with the Marina loan program. So if someone could please just give me 3 minutes on, like, I'm hearing a lot of dissent in my ranks about whether this is funded, it's not funded, there's no use for it. I'm just completely unclear on what is going on with the Marina loan program. So maybe that's a question for you, Ramona, or someone else on this call. Just if you could just give me 3 minutes, then I'm done.
Okay. I'm going to start out, and I have Casey Caldwell on here, who is actually the expert in the loan program. But to date, as you know, this is an unfunded program. So we currently don't have an allocation to support this program. And part of this process here is to determine whether the department or the division should we continue with a loan program. I know that there's a difference between the private marina loan and the public marina loan programs. And, you know, we've seen the data. I know in presentations in the past, we definitely can provide this to you all again. I think Karen has, historically, we just haven't seen the demand for it over these last few years. We've reached out in many times through many ways to marinas. And so I think part of this process is, determining whether there truly is a need, either or. So maybe there truly is with the public marina. We've heard the public marinas, yes, they don't have any other resource. Privates may have other resources, to get their loans. So, and then within the division, if there the decision is to continue with one or both of those programs, once we have our fund is sustainable that we can support loaning out the money, would be internal expertise in the department. So there's certain parts of the program that we also need to look at internally to determine, there's certain areas that we just simply don't have that expertise internally. So we have reached out several times through the Attorney General's office and, perhaps contracting, which we haven't been successful in. So that would be internally what we would be looking at should, the determination be that we don't need to, or we would continue with having a marina loan program, private or public. And so if you're getting into like the percentage, the formulas, I'm going to let Casey kind of jump in a little bit on that if you want like more specifics on the program itself.
Well, so I guess, so this guy from Newport Beach was on the last commission meeting, and they say, oh, we want to get some funding to rebuild some marina down in Newport Beach. Mm-hmm. So what I'm, this is what I'm not getting, right? And what I'm hearing from you is that there's basically no, there's not demand for this program, which I find kind of frankly a little bewildering, because if you can get a loan to build something, you would always take it, right? But if you're representing to me, and I'm not, you know, there's no demand for it. So here's what I'm trying to get at. I don't understand, is the issue, let's just discontinue this program altogether? Or I'm not understanding the issue, right?
Yeah. And I think part of that also is to determine, because, you know, historically we have found that it does benefit revenue in this program through, through the loan repayment. So that's one thing that we've looked at. And, you know, during the times when they were building, you know, we were building lots of marinas, it truly benefited. I think we're at the point, and Casey, jump in, whenever you like here, but over the years, you know, we built these marinas 20 to 30 years ago, so that we could start seeing potentially, the need as these marinas start to need improvements, or, there's the need out there again. So that's one thing that we haven't really determined. Just because we've reached out and asked these questions, and we have been surveyed, and didn't get a lot of data on that. So that's one of the things that we are considering of why, as you mentioned, why the need, why wouldn't someone come if there's this loan program and opportunity there, and if they needed, their marinas to be improved. So that's one of the things that we're looking at. And again, right now, with the condition of the fund, obviously we wouldn't be able to support any loans. So I think through this, it's kind of a twofold in this whole process, is number one, sustaining the fund, and then also looking at this program to determine whether, the need is truly there. So Casey, do you want to kind of add to that, or
no? I will real quick. Casey Caldwell, Boating and Waterways. Greetings from Sacramento. I think Ramona's explanation of where we are with the loan programs was fantastic, so I don't have a ton to add. I think I would say that the demand for the loan programs is low. It's not non-existent. We certainly are aware that there are a few folks who are aware of the program and are interested, but we don't get a ton of inquiries about it. So again, I think Ramona was right on in characterizing kind of where we are with demand, and, you know, the real issue before this group and that we've been wrestling with for years is really, resourcing it, because Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund benefits when we can revolve the funds, when we can take the principal, we can generate interest, funds everything else in Boating Our Waterways. So it's certainly a program that we'd love to see succeed. With the lack of resources in the revolving fund right now, choices have to be made that Ramona is doing an excellent job of captaining. And I am certainly on ready to help out with the loan programs when we're able to get them back going again. But like Ramona explained, where we are right now is, again, a low demand situation coupled with the revolving fund being in the condition it's in. So it's a combination of the things Ramona was talking about.
Just jumping in, Casey, can you remind me? I thought one of the issues that had come up about the demand for it was that there was a question about interest rates, and that the private, like, you could go out onto the market and get better rates than what we were offering. Is that true? Is it not? Where are we in terms of competitiveness? And I guess something to consider is, if inflation is coming, then the need for this might be more great.
Sure, Commissioner, good question. I know it's come up in some recent commission meetings as well, and I wish Karen were here to handle this question, because I know that she's discussed it with the commission before a few times, and it is a question that keeps coming up. You're right about the current interest rate market potentially about to change, and that can make a difference on the demand side for our programs. But I mean, it's a little bit speculative, right? We don't really know exactly how that's going to play. And we know that the private loan program and the public loan program have slightly different interest rate situations based on the statutes that we go by. So I would say that if you want to get deeper into this, because Karen's kind of been the quarterback on this one, I would defer to her. And unfortunately, she's not here, but we can certainly take that up. And I can let her know that question has arisen so she can be ready to provide additional information on it.
No, that's helpful. And I would also just flag that I know in previous commission meetings, this is more for the newer commissioners. This program historically did bring in revenue to the division, and a lot of the infrastructure that was built is, you know, going to come due for upgrades or rehabilitation or things like that. And so there may be a need to have like future loans. And so, you know, before the commission or the department or, you know, the administration dismantles it in its entirety, I would really have a look at that. I'd hate to see it go away. I think it's something that maybe we don't fund right now, but we would, you know, not want to lose that tool in the toolbox.
Sure. And there has been some outreach by the Grants and Loans Unit to assess out places where we know that we've had that 20, 30 year wait to have rehabilitation done. To my understanding, that outreach is continuing. So certainly something that we can follow up on as well. So I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Okay, well, I said 3 minutes and it turned into 10 minutes. So I appreciate everyone's indulgence, but that is very helpful, everyone, for that. That now I got the picture.
Is there anyone else, Megan, that's waiting?
At this time, I am not seeing any hands raised. Once again, it's *9 if you're dialing in by phone. But yes, I'm seeing no other hands raised at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so I just wanted to make a few announcements before we move to conclude this. We have the Revenue Generating Subcommittee meeting. We'll be meeting today at 11 o'clock on Teams. The link to join the meeting is posted on the Department of Boating and Waterways website, and you can also get it from emailing Megan Russell at megan.russell@parks.ca.gov. Also, the Alternate Funding Source Subcommittee is scheduled to meet again on February 17th at 10 a.m. And that link will also be posted on the Boating Waterways website. And with that, we have subcommittee meeting coming up at 11 o'clock. So I'm moved to conclude this workshop.
Chairman Ehrman, can I just say two things?
Of course.
A suggestion to the commission ad hoc, and maybe 3 minutes. Catherine, I do have a question on, since these committees will be moving forward longer than a year, would they still be considered ad hoc, or do they move into subcommittee?
Well, there's really no, in the law, there's no restriction on a time frame. However, ad hoc does imply that it's a temporary type of thing. So if it's something that is where the group of people are going to be making recommendations to the board or to the commission, it's something that really is going to need, you know, public input. So we're always going to notice that. It's better to make it a standing committee. Standing committees are like budget committees, nominating committees, executive committees. So there isn't a restriction, I guess, is the short answer.
Okay, but ad hocs, then they can continue to meet on their own. It doesn't have to be a public notice.
Correct.
Okay, so I think we'll continue with that and see how long it is. Okay. And then the other is just a suggestion to all of you, and while you're meeting in your, you know, individual meetings, is perhaps to have that. Again, you have our state, you know, division resources there to assist you, but maybe an agenda. Sending out ahead of time to your committee would help, and then also follow up with a meeting summary, and that way we can ensure that we have continued to document the discussions and keep it all in, on our, you know, a website. We are working with our IT to improve the commission website as well. But just so we can, you know, have it documented and recorded of, you know, issues that you guys are working on, and perhaps, you know, action items, and just so we have it available. So I just would want to throw that out there again. If you, you know, it may be helpful to the committee moving from your meetings moving forward, you know, to have that agenda and then the follow-up meeting summaries. That's all, Commissioner Chair.
So I will conclude this meeting. I thank everyone for participating, all the commissioners and the boating waterway staff and all the outside participants. We thank you for your time, and that's all we have.
Thank you all. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Hello tomorrow.